It was really hard to listen to that sound and not do something about it, not be able to do anything about it. And I think there's probably something evolutionary about that, that we have to be wired to respond to babies crying because they need us to survive. And I'm not a parent, hearing a crying baby still gets my attention, cuts through the rest of what's going on and gives me this visceral feeling of, oh no, and a compulsion to do something about it. I suspect I'm not the only one who has that. I was actually, a couple weeks ago, I was with a friend of mine and meeting her son for the first time. He's 5 months old, and he was crying. It was the end of the night, and we were standing around, and she was bouncing him, and a couple of us realized that we were also bouncing. I was like, we're helping, we have to help. And so compassion is related to that feeling. And I got on this crying baby thing by reading about a monk, an experienced meditator, who said that when asked to describe the feelings nurtured in meditation, likened them to awakening the warm, loving, caring feeling which a mother would activate toward a crying child, or a parent would activate toward a crying child. And that this is also the same feeling that arises when, in this study, watching videos of other people in suffering in some way. That wanting, feeling deeply, having warm feelings, and then being moved and wanting to do something about it. So compassion. This Sunday marks our 10-month exploration of compassionate living, which is inspired and based on Karen Armstrong's book, 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life, which is right here. One sermon a month will be devoted to the topic. And most of the months, the monthly sermon will focus on one of the chapters of the book. But for this service, I'm sort of covering chapters 1 and 2, which are learn about compassion and look at your own world. But I encourage you to pick up the book. It's at the library. It's you can buy it. You can borrow my copy one at a time. And also to check out our Spirit Study Compassionate Living Facebook page to talk with one another about that. So we start with learn about compassion. And what do we mean by compassion? As Armstrong puts it and described in our reading, compassion literally means to endure something with another person. More broadly, though, compassion refers to both feelings and behavior. She says it's an attitude of principled, consistent altruism. The Greater Good Science Center at the University of California, Berkeley has a similar description. They say, among emotion researchers, compassion is defined as the feeling that arises when you are confronted with another person's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. And they write that while empathy refers that more generally to our ability to perceive and feel the emotions of another person, compassion is when those feelings and thoughts include the desire to help. The desire to help, the desire to be a neighbor, like in the story of the Good Samaritan. And the story of the Good Samaritan is a little bit overtold. I think sometimes we sort of feel like we know it. I feel like I'm bored already. I know who does the right thing. But there's a lot there. Oh, incidentally, I will say, for those of you who have been around the congregation for a while and know some of our other congregants, Tom Carlstrom and Becky Collins, you can imagine the story of the Good Samaritan. Tom, as the man who was robbed and half dead, being put on an imaginary donkey and carried over here by Becky and the imaginary donkey. So just have that in your head with the robots from before. Anyway, it was good. So, and I like Bible stories. I'm fortunate to have been brought up UU without a lot of baggage about them. So I get to encounter them freshly, and I had fun digging into this one. So it's also worth remembering that it's a parable. It's a teaching story, so it was never It's not asserted that it's something that happened, and so it's extra worth looking at it as a literary text and thinking, like, what are the words that were used in it, and why was it told in this particular way? So English majors kind of put that brain on. And the story says, the text says, it's from the Gospel of Luke, a Samaritan was while traveling came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. Or that word at the end, pity, is also translated as compassion. And many biblical scholars who actually know biblical Greek, have pointed out that the word for pity or compassion is a very visceral and embodied word. It's a word that I'm going to try. It's something like splanchnizomai, so I can't really pronounce that, but it's a word literally comes from words meaning guts or viscera. So that's why I had it in the story for all ages, as when he saw the injured man, he felt like his own insides hurt. That's a feeling of seeing someone suffering and feeling your own heart twinge or your stomach twist, suffering with someone, enduring with. And it's also, like with our definition of compassion, it's immediately followed by action. So he was moved with compassion and went to the man and bandaged his wounds. So this is a word for compassion. There's other words that are used to mean things like mercy or tenderheartedness in biblical Greek, but this is the one in this story. It actually occurs, thank you, internet, it occurs three other times in the book of Luke, and all three times it's immediately followed by action and some kind of healing action. So it appears first in a story about Jesus raising a widow's son from the dead. It says that Jesus felt compassion and told the widow, do not weep, and then tells the man to get up. Then it occurs in the story of the Good Samaritan, where the Samaritan is moved with compassion and goes to bind his wounds. And then the third time it occurs in a story that's often called the Prodigal Son, which some of you may know, where a man's son returns after having sort of squandered his life and lived ruinously. And when he comes back, not imagining he'll get a good reception, the text says, while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. That's that word. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him and calls for a celebration immediately. And it's worth noting that in all three cases, the suffering that elicits compassion is it's a matter of life and death in some way. So it's in the first story, it's literally a man is dead. In the second story, the story that we heard today, the man, the robbers leave him half dead on the road. And in the third, the prodigal son was so estranged from his family that it felt like he was dead. When he returns, the father says, this son of mine was dead and is alive again. So compassion is powerful, and it has to do with feeling with and acting and at the point of suffering that is about life and death. One of the touchstone stories in my call to ministry has to do with an experience of compassion that has these elements in it. And you've probably heard it. I've told it a couple times already. I was in college in a retreat center basement with a number of other lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students. And we were doing an activity where you step forward if the statement made applies to you. And I watched many people step forward to say, in response to the statement, I have considered suicide over my sexual orientation or gender identity. And then also, I have thought God did not love me because of my sexual orientation or gender identity. And I, my heart hurt, and I bawled there in the circle. It was a lot of the same people, right? Connection between feeling worthy of love and feeling worthy of life. My insides hurt, and I felt the need to do something. I felt the need to do my part to end religiously based bigotry against LGBT people, and to spread the good news that spirituality and being LGBT are are actually not opposed and can help and influence one another, and that everyone is loved. And so that's a touchstone experience of compassion. But there are a lot of places, I'm sure you have your own experiences of compassion as well, and there are a lot of places when we look around our world that could use compassion and an approach that's informed by compassion. A lot of places. But today, on what is the 15th anniversary of 9/11, I'm particularly concerned with our Muslim neighbors. You know that in the, many of you are probably aware that in the aftermath of 9/11, anti-Muslim rhetoric and hate crimes spiked. Anti-Muslim crimes against Muslims and people who appeared to be Muslim. You probably may have heard this also, but they are spiking again this year and this summer as Donald Trump calls for a ban on Muslims entering the United States. Those crimes are up. There was one that just happened last week on Thursday. A woman yelling anti-Muslim sentiments attacked two women in Brooklyn who were pushing their children in strollers. And she yelled at them and tried to pull off their headscarves. No one was seriously hurt, but she also not only was attacking the women, but she pushed over one of the strollers and then rattled the other one, which is horrible. So there's deep need for compassion. There's literally babies crying when it comes to our Muslim neighbors. And so those of us who aren't Muslim have a particular call to some action to relieve that suffering. And a first step is learning about Islam, learning about Muslims. I'm about to go on a tangent about how our country is segregated in terms of race and class and also religion, but you can maybe ask me about that later. But getting to know what Islam is like and what it isn't like. Karen Armstrong's book is part of a larger project, which is about the Charter for Compassion. And there is, and it was put together by individuals and religious leaders from all different backgrounds from around the world came together to write this statement that basically says all religious and spiritual traditions believe in compassion, and then the statement calls everyone to put compassion back at the center of religious and spiritual and ethical life. And it says, and you can actually pick up a handout, has it on the back if you didn't get it on the way in, on the hymnal table on the way out. The principle of compassion lies at the heart of all religious, ethical, and spiritual traditions, calling us always to treat others as we wish to be treated ourselves. And that's true. And the Charter also called all people to return to the ancient principle that any interpretation of Scripture that breeds violence, hatred, or disdain is illegitimate. And that is also true. It is true that a lot of bad things have been done in the name of religion, but I would agree with the Charter that that those things are based on interpretations of the tradition that are illegitimate. I don't subscribe to the belief that religion itself is the root of evil. People have the capacity to do bad things in us, whether we're religious or not, and people have done bad things in the name of pretty much all religions and in the name of non-religion as well. So calling on us to reject any interpretation that breeds violence or hatred or disdain is crucial. Those types of interpretations are what caused everything, have caused a lot of suffering, whether it's the conservative fundamentalist Christianity interpretation that caused my college friends to question their lives and their worthiness, whether it's the interpretation of religion that caused people to become terrorists and to act out of that hatred, or whether it's the ideology that views Muslims as fundamentally dangerous or less than other people in America. And uprooting all those interpretations isn't easy. We say in our child dedication that we believe that everyone has inherent worth and dignity, that everyone has original blessing inside them, but that doesn't mean that that comes out without work. There's also the capacity for selfishness and violence. And so it takes work, it takes learning, it takes book learning and education. So one thing you can do is, specifically given the rise of Islamophobia, is to learn about Islam. And I would encourage you to go to charterforcompassion.org and open their section on combating Islamophobia. There's some really good resources there for you or for people in your life to look at. Getting to know people of different backgrounds, also important. And reminding one another that our images of Islam and of sort of non-majority things in our country are often distorted by media sensationalism, because everyday compassion and good deeds don't sell the way that violence and extremism do. So that's, I think, one reason that we have distorted views of Islam in particular, and then other things in general. So education, getting to know people, but to cultivate compassion, we also need more than just to engage our minds. This stuff, fear, I think, and selfishness and violence are on a deep level also. Karen Armstrong talks in the preface to her book about brain science and about the lizard brain, and those impulses towards selfishness and violence come from deep down in the more primitive areas of our brain. And so overturning those impulses and cultivating compassion also requires working on a deep level, a non-rational level as well, working on the level of myth and ritual and symbolism and spiritual practice, and doing things like telling stories. I think that's why I like stories. It's and music and art, and they work on you. It's one thing to know that your religion teaches you to love God with all your heart and soul and strength and love your neighbor as yourself, as happens in the story, but it's another to know what that looks like in practice. What does that mean? And so that's why the book of Luke has Jesus answering with a story, and that's why we retold that story to you, because it's helpful to hear stories about what compassion looks like in practice, to hear stories that tug on our heartstrings and our guts and our viscera. It's not incidentally also a story told that show goodness and compassion employed by the religious other, by the customary villain, by the Samaritan. So that's my call, is to learn about compassion, and to look for stories, to look in your own religious and spiritual traditions and teachings, and to look elsewhere, and to look around for stories that tug at you, that teach about compassion, and that call us all back to our common humanity. So go and do the same.